We did it.
I wish that everybody could have heard the noises that happened in the countdown before the recording started.
We hit the post.
Yeah. Guys?
Yeah.
I have my Land Cruiser
Let's
back.
Talk about it. Let's talk about it.
So I got several comments that were like after last week's show, and they're like, you didn't say anything about the Land Cruiser. What is happening? So today's Wednesday, last Thursday. Wow, that's actually been almost a week. That's crazy. I went and picked it up. And so let me tell you so that I can flesh out the story. I can finish the story. Here's how it went. So he told me, you know, come pick it up this day. He said, come pick it up tomorrow. The only problem is the oil pressure gauge is not working. I've got a sensor coming. I'm going to replace it in the morning. You come get it at lunchtime. We're good. Cool. So I show up and he's like, the pressure gauge is still not working. It's got a new sensor in it. I don't really know what it is, but it has plenty of pressure. Just the gauge isn't working. So when you come back at 1,000 miles, you know, I'm going to check the oil, make sure there's no metal in it, and I'm going to like tighten everything. At that point, I will address the sensor, but you can go ahead and drive it. Cool. That's fine. So he's like, you can pay with card. So I'm not going to talk about the money, but I paid him for it and I paid a reasonable price. The end. Okay. But he's like, you can pay with the card or you can pay with the check. And the card will be $200 more because of the card fees. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't have a check. So Jenny had dropped me off. So I'm like, call her. I'm like, hey, can you go home and get a check? So she brings a check, drops it off, goes back and does what she's doing. I look at the paper and I write down the number that I'm looking at on the check, which was the number before I had paid the deposit before, which was like $1,500. So I wrote a check for $1,500 more than it needed to be. And I'm like anxious to get in the car and drive it away, right? And I'm like, man, I just wrote the check wrong. And so he's like, just take the truck, drive home, get another check, and bring it back to me. So get in the truck. I pull out of the thing, and I'm like, this is so weird. It felt so weird. Not in a good way. Felt weird. It felt like somebody else's vehicle completely.
That's just because you haven't been in it in so long, or because they redid the seats or something?
No, I think it was just because I hadn't been in it so long. And it smelled like not me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It smelled like I hate cigarette smoke, and it smelled like not somebody had been smoking it, but it had been opened in the shop where people are smoking. It was like that kind of thing. And it's not strong. It's gone. It's fine. But it just, I don't know, man. It felt so weird. And I drove it home and got the check, and then like while it was in my driveway, I was like, okay, I should just like open the hood and at least look at this engine just to like verify that all the stuff is there. So I go to pop the latch for the hood, and it's just like loose. There's like
no latch.
Yeah, and the cable is like attached to the thing, and I'm just pulling on it and there's nothing. So I go up to the front of the truck and I like try to get my fingers under it. Totally jammed, will not open. Like, okay, that's fine. It's fine. So we drive back over there and I get there, and on the way back, I'm like going to make a turn, flip the turn signals. There's no turn signals.
It's no clicky.
I'm like, what the heck, man? And then I look down and the emergency brake light is on. Never been on before. It's just on. The brake's on. I'm like checking. The brake's not on. The light's on. And so I went from like this, yes, finally, high of that to like, oh, this is not cool.
This
like,
is the cascade of problems.
I don't like this at all. And so I got back over there. I paid him. And we talked for a little bit, and I asked him about the hood latch, and he was like, no, I mean, it was working this morning when I closed the hood.
Oh, come on.
And I'm like, okay, well, that is like, I can figure that out. That's not, you know, that's just a little latch. And I said, well, you know, there's this a couple other things that, you know, were kind of weird. And he was like, oh, I thought the brake light was already, it's been on as long as I've had it. I'm like, well, maybe that happened when the engine seized before. Maybe there, I don't know. So I took it home. I spent the afternoon in the driveway just like, you know, okay, how do I get the hood open? What else am I going
to find? It could be impossible to get the hood open without the wire connected.
Well, it's not impossible because I figured out how to do it. I looked up videos and how to get it open. What I ended up doing, actually, I tried some other stuff that people recommended, but I ended up just grabbing the cable with some, like, a vice grip and just really from the latch and pulling on it super hard. And it came out like 6 inches. So the cable has just, you know, come loose on the inside somewhere, but I did get it to pop open. So that was cool. All right. Win number one. So I open it up. Look at the engine. Looks exactly like the old engine. I mean, nothing to see here, you know. But I checked everything out. It looked good, you know, like well done and stuff as far as just glancing at it. So I close the hood, go back, start the truck up. And I'm like, yeah, and I also pulled the fuses for the dash and for the lights just to check them, make sure the fuses were good. I put the fuse back in, flip on the turn signals, and the turn signals work. I'm like, oh.
Loose fuse? Loose fuse, maybe?
Maybe. I don't
loose
know.
Wire?
Maybe they're just somehow now attached to the latch that opens the hood. I have no idea. But
don't ever, you guys are electronic guys a little bit, so, but don't ever overestimate or underestimate electronic contact cleaner spray. It fixes a lot of problems.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, yep,
especially when stuff's been sitting. I was thinking about that, that all of this stuff has been sitting unelectrified for a really long time. And so it is possible that connections, both in the fuse box and just like at connectors, have oxidized and gotten nasty. What were you showing there, David?
Electronic cleaner spray.
Oh, yeah. I have some of that. It may be the same stuff you have. It's called like pot something, and it's for potentiometers for
This is probably the same stuff.
Yeah.
I have three here working on the old vintage synthesizer. So there's one that's made just for faders.
Oh, yeah.
There's one that's just a general electric cleaner. And the one that's made for faders is for the plastic conductive slider thing. And that's why it's different than the general cleaner. And then there is a fader lubricant that is, and it's all stupid expensive. But yeah, Jimmy briefly said, you guys are into electronics, and I just want to confirm that I know nothing about electronics.
I've been diving in lately,
but
you confront them.
I confront them. Yes. Yeah. Can you remind us, Bob, why you took the truck in the first place and how long ago it was?
No engine.
That's true. People probably haven't even been listening. They don't remember the beginning of the saga. Yeah. So one day, 2.5 years ago, 995 days before I got it back, my wife was driving it somewhere, and I think a seal just let loose or something, but all the oil dumped out of the engine and it seized while she was driving it.
Mm.
And so 2 days later, I went and picked up a replacement, the same engine, like a used engine from Tennessee, brought it back, dropped it off. So they had the engine 3 days after it died. And that was 995 days ago, well before I got it back. And it's just been a disaster getting it done. The machine shop that was working on it is pretty terrible and whatever. Anyway, it's done now, and I've got it. And I've been driving it for almost a week. And that first day was like, well, I guess I should sell this. It's not mine anymore. This is weird. I don't really like it. Mm. The next day, my son's got out there with me, and we washed it. And I took the rack off of it, and I just went in on the inside with some cleaner, and I just like wiped everything down and got rid of dust. And then I drove it around town for like 30 minutes. And I'm like, cool. All right. This is my truck. It's back. I feel it now. It's been fantastic. It is just as slow as I remember it being, which is great. AC still doesn't work like it didn't before. So that's, you know, comforting. It's back finally. So now I need a new saga to keep everybody in about.
And it feels like yours.
It does feel like mine again, which is really cool. When I first got it, I took it out to the farm where the green Land Cruiser has been, and I've got it in the barn out there. And just because I don't have an indoor place at the house to put it anymore. So I put it out there, took it out there, and it needed to be driven as well. So it was cool to like pull the old one out of the garage and drive it around a little bit and park it next to the newer, older one.
You're just looking at both of them.
Yeah. I just had them parked next to each other. I'm like, look at that. I have two Land Cruisers and they both drive. That's awesome. You know? So that was fun. But, so this week I've been, you know, just trying to like research the things that are wrong with it. I'm going to try to figure out how to fix them. I figured, I've been planning that if I got this thing back eventually, you know, well, I was hoping to get it back. But once I got it back, I was going to do all of the stuff that I'd been putting off doing to it beforehand to make it drivable as long as possible. Like, if I'm going to put in this effort, money, time, it needs to, you know, like, I want it to be my vehicle and keep up with it going forward. So I've been planning a bunch of upgrades to it and services to it and stuff like that. So that
very
is
cool.
Yeah.
Breather on it, right? Didn't you put, like, so you could drive through a lake? You put that on?
Yeah,
that?
I put a snorkel on it a long time ago.
And
yeah.
Is it still usable? Is it still, like, when you close the hood, it all lines up?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, none of that stuff changed. Mm. Yeah, that's there. And this last week, I replaced the rack with a new lower profile rack, which is kind of cool. And
what year is it?
It's a 92.
Okay, so it's relatively, in relative terms, it's kind of new.
I mean, kind of. It's technically a historic vehicle, you know.
Yeah, like, no, isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's so
when
weird.
When you look at the drastic changes between 1920 to 1930, then 1930 to 1940, and then 1940 to 50, 50 to 60, 60 to 70, and then it starts slowing down. 80s cars could still pass for 90s cars, and 90s cars could still pass for aughts and from like 90 to like 2010.
I don't know, because
2020, they all look the same for the most part.
But then
part.
Everything started being computer controlled, and the computer of the brain of the car got connected to more and more things. And then there was a big change really quickly, you know? And so you go from 90s cars, which you could for the most part open up and work on.
Yeah.
And then like early 2000s, it was like, let's cover everything in plastic. You don't need to see the engine. You don't need to know that there are wires. Like, let's just cover it all and wrap it all in.
Yeah. The Mercedes SL that I have, when you open the hood, it's just one big giant plastic cover.
Yeah.
I don't even see a carburetor. Like, I don't see an air cleaner or anything. It's just it's crazy.
Yep. So, you know, I'm sure there will be more drama with the Land Cruiser, but for now, it is working. And it's really nice to have. I'm enjoying it. And I'm back to like the... I know this is stupid, but I'm back to the thing where like I'm driving around town and somebody will pass me and you can see they're like, hey, look at that thing. You know, they kind of like wave and give the little like, that's awesome. Like, that's a nice feeling. Anytime you have a cool older vehicle, you know, there's a crowd that appreciates it and you pass them sometimes.
It's 100% of the time I take the 67 out. Somebody will ask, what year is that? Or nice car. Mm. Every single time.
You know what's funny is like, I mean, there's a lot of funny things about this, but my entire life, and you know this about me, but I was not a car person until 5 years ago or something. I don't know. Like, I just didn't, whatever. There are modes of transportation. I don't really care. I don't get excited about the way they look or whatever. And then something happened where I started appreciating and understanding a little bit more about cars and started appreciating them. And now I am totally that guy. I walked out of the post office two days ago. And a guy pulled up in a T-top Corvette, probably early 80s, late 70s. I don't know exactly. And it was gorgeous. And he was like getting out of the car. And I'm like, dude, that's a nice looking car. He's like, thanks, man. It was a lot of work. I'm like, cool. What year is it? And it dawned on me that, hey, look, I'm that guy. I'm the guy that's like, hey, what year is it? But yeah, it was beautiful. And he put a lot of work into it. And now that I'm working on cars, I understand how much work it actually is to get something that looks, you know, like that awesome. And so
I got my car started this week. Did you guys happen to see on Instagram? I got the old Cadillac started on Sunday.
No,
me and Rob and Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concepts and Rob and I were fiddling around with it, and I did a live stream, and we it fired up immediately. The car hasn't run in I'm guessing 40 years the way it looks, because it's missing parts, and I couldn't even get none of the spark plugs were in place. I couldn't even screw one in without retapping each one of the heads. That's how much rust was in the threads and everything. So it's been that long. It's not running perfect, and we burnt out some of the stuff trying to get it running again over starting it, and some of the wiring isn't perfect, but that's all going to get redone. But we got it started, and it's on my live. It's on my Instagram live. Now it's one of my reels. You can go back and see it. And then I also published, this is a funny story, my internet went down for some odd reason Saturday morning. I got a notification from my alarm company that said, we're no longer communicating with your house. And Then 10 minutes later, Ryan called me and said, the internet's out. I was like, oh yeah, something's wrong. They just told me. Anyway, so I did not have internet from Saturday morning until yesterday morning. Yesterday was Tuesday morning. Yeah. So I started uploading my last video via telephone connection, hotspot. On
so you picked up your can with a string sticking out of it, and you're like, I'm going to cram this video in this can.
I actually put an extra two strings on it so I could have more upload time. So I connected the computer to my phone after my edit was done. I was late on my edit for the weekend. It was part two of the Cadillac. I started to upload it Monday afternoon with a dedicated phone that I have a couple extra phones. And I have three cell phones, by the way.
You got your upload phone and your download phone and then your email.
So I have my hotspot phone. I have my hotspot phone next to my computer. It took about 25 hours to upload that video through the phone. Maybe.
That's a long time.
I just left it sitting. I was like, either the internet will get fixed or this will upload. Actually, it uploaded about 2 hours before the internet guy got here. So it wasn't 20. It was like 19 hours. Then the internet guy came in. So
we have an Apple store nearby, so I can just go over there and sit on the bench. And,
That's cool. So you guys will appreciate the boomer in me. The guy comes and he goes, yeah, your modem doesn't work. He goes, let me just swap it out. So he takes it, swaps it out. And it looks like, it's a disaster in there. It looks like I don't know what it looks like. It looks like somebody took four copy machines and three printers and exploded them and then threw them underneath the counter over there. And there's just blinking lights. If I send you a picture, you guys will laugh. Blinking lights, wires. I got telephone that I never use. I have alarm company, fire company, all kinds of stuff plugged in under there. And it's all plugged into an Airport Extreme, which apparently is obsolete.
Yeah,
and
a little bit.
So the guy goes, okay, you have internet now. And I said, well, he goes, I don't know. He goes, those things are kind of outdated. He goes, you might not be getting any updates. He goes, which is probably why it's not connecting. So I do a hard restart, go to the app, open the app up, and it's not connecting. And then he goes, and the last time this happened, it wasn't connecting. So somebody suggested I buy an Eero, Erro. So there's a brand new Eero there that I saw sitting on top of the box next to all the components with wires and sticking out. And he goes, well, you got the Eero there. I go, well, does the Eero work? He goes, I don't know. It's not connected. I go, that thing is not connected. He goes, no. He goes, it's just sitting there. I go, oh, I thought that was part of all that. He goes, no. He goes, that's unused. It's sitting there. It looks like maybe you opened the box and never took. And I started to remember it. I'm like, oh yeah. The last time I tried the Airport Extreme 20 times, this is like a year and a half ago. I tried it 20 times till it finally connected. I said, okay, I don't need to set up the Eero. I don't need to go down that road. And I said, I go, so the Euro's not connected? He goes, no. He goes, there would be two of the same thing. He goes, he was very nice. I'm making him sound like he was being sarcastic. He wasn't at all. And he said, you could use the Eero in place of the Airport Extreme. You could just download the app and you'll figure it out. And so kind of like landing an airplane in the dark with a blindfold on, I was able to fumble my way through the app. When I downloaded the Eero app, apparently I did this before because it downloaded right away and my barn airport thing showed up. What is it called when it transmits? I want to call it an airport, but that's the Apple name, right?
Just is like a Wi-Fi hotspot or like a Wi-Fi point?
A Wi-Fi transmitter, yeah. What is that called?
Yeah.
Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Just the Wi-Fi box.
Access port point.
You're creating a mesh.
Yeah. Well, so the Eero, I plugged it in here. That's what he said. He goes, they're usually meant for like spreading the internet around, and I didn't know that. So anyway, so I was able to make that the actual thing that transmits the internet from here. And then I was like, but the Airport Extreme's got like 10 plugs in it. How am I going to plug all that? It only has two plugs. That's what I think was the holdup the last time. He goes, oh, what you need is a switch box. He goes, come to my car. And he handed me one. He goes, you can have this. He goes, this is from a customer. He goes, you could use it. He goes, just take it. So I gave him, I didn't have any cash to tip him. I gave him a couple of razor blades and a knife that were in my car.
You would.
He's like, of course. These are cool. What are these for? I was like, I go, look up my name. It's printed on the thing. I go, look up my name. You see what I do. And so I went in and it took me about 20 minutes of fumbling around and I finally figured out.
Nice.
It's much easier these days than it was years ago, especially with like a euro.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now technically speaking, I can get another euro and put it as far away as I can until I get another single to like that it'll spread the single somewhere else. Because I might be able to get one inside the leather shop, picking it up off of the TV show barn.
Yeah, you may have to put them like, you know, if you want to get one really far away, you may have to get one in the middle. So like one end of your shop and then one on the other end of your shop to hop to the one at the other barn or something.
Oh, that's a good idea. So, okay, maybe I'll get a couple.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mesh, so they end up talking to each other, you know, through each other to get to the thing. So, and of course, there are limits to, you know, how distance and stuff. But
so anyway, I got my internet hooked up. I got the old car started. I got my parts car. I don't know if I sent you guys pictures of the parts car. I'll do it. Instagram.
Before you got it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's now in the backyard. It's cool. It's such a beautiful, like, design was just so beautiful back in the day. It's funny. Me and Rob are like, it's a 4-door car. We don't really care much about it. But while it's sitting there, we're both like, we should like go look for another one of these that's in good shape. This is such a beautiful, like the 1940s was such a beautiful era for cars. Yeah. Even like Dodges and like ugly cars that typically you wouldn't expect to have, like, everything from that era is just so sexy and just
all the curves and bubbly.
It's such a crazy, beautiful. This car is just unbelievable, and it's funny.
And isn't that kind of ironic too? Because, you know, comparatively, the process of shaping metal now is so much, and even in the '80s is so much easier than it was at that point. You know, in the '30s and forties and stuff. But they were, instead of making flat shapes, they were making the craziest compound
the craziest
curves.
Bubbles. Yeah, it's like the thing might have
had
been stretched 2 or 3 times till it got to its final shape. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm sending you guys pictures. I'm going to use the tail of this car for the tail of my car, the two fenders and the rear bumpers and stuff.
I think that's one of the reasons I like the Karmann Ghia shape so much, is that it was at a point when most cars were beginning to slim up and become not angular yet, but, you know, they were becoming less bubbly. And there's something about the Karmann Ghia, is like they're just not giving up on the fact that we can make hand-shaped panels that are curvy, and there are compound curves going in every direction, and there's no flat surfaces. And I don't know, I think that was why I was drawn to it. But
yeah, this looks like a gangster car.
It does. It's funny, Mike the fireman comes in the backyard and he goes, they shot Sonny on the causeway. He's dead.
Yeah.
It looks like it has bullet holes through the windows.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But what else am I working on? I'm doing some behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm making bar carts for my liquor friends. And these would be generic bar carts that would typically just get stickers put on them. So I'm working on those. And I got a new bandsaw from, I'm showing you guys pictures of the bar carts. I got a new bandsaw from Harvey, so I got to do a review on that. I showed some Instagram stories. There's a computer on the bandsaw, and everybody's like, what is the computer for? What could it possibly be for?
The computer, so you can run your Wi-Fi through the bandsaw?
Yep, that's going to be a hotspot. It has something to do with the tension. It gives you a good readout on tension and a couple of other things. Tension and speed, I think, are the two number one things. But I'll plug it in today and I'll get a better read on it. Oh, I made some leaps and bounds. Even though I haven't really been talking much about the graveyard house, we made some leaps yesterday. I had to pull the floor completely out because it was unbelievably unlevel. There was no way for me to level it. So I was able to, and I'll show you guys a picture. It'll be in the next video. But you could see here in this picture, I need 3 main joists to go, one middle and then this, so left side, right side, and one in the middle. And that's a 24 foot long piece. So you see what I have there is 2 12 foot 6x8s connected together with the steel splice in the middle. And I'll post something about this on Patreon today. And getting those in, each one of those things weighs like 200 pounds. So me and Mike wrestling those things in, getting them in place, was a lot of work. So that was just
there. Is there a post underneath that middle? I can't quite see.
Yeah, there's a little tiny. Well, that was the old foundation wall, so I had to like kind of break the top of it all down, because the first attempted fix on that floor was to lower that center beam. So that center beam had both joists from left and right side of the room coming to them, so it was raised in the middle of the room. So my first try to fix was cut both sides of that really long 24-inch beam and then lower it. So I had to pick out the whole foundation wall.
Gotcha.
So that was the first attempt at leveling that room. And we did that, and it just, everything else was still cockeyed. It was level in seven other different directions. So I said, really the only fix here is to just go full, just basically do a lung, heart and lung transplant in this room and take everything out. And that's what I did. And then, so now we're building back.
I'm looking at this photo, and I've always looked at the floor in this room because you showed us several pictures of it at different stages, but I've never looked at the ceiling. And so the ceiling is the floor above it, obviously, but this, all those beams and everything and the wood flooring, are you going to keep all that exposed?
I plan on it. Yeah, it was all covered in sheetrock, so the previous owner exposed it all. So it's it basically is a mirror image of what was underneath it. So what I removed was what basically what that looked like.
Gotcha.
But you can see how the spacing is all random. There's no there's no adherence to any guidelines. Some things are 20 inches apart, some are 10 inches apart. It makes no sense. There's no real rhythm up there. So I'm going to basically keep that exposed. I did buy replacement beams for each one of those because some of them are skinny, some of them are rotted at the end. So I was going to just do a major heart transplant there as well, but not right away. I'm going to wait on that.
Wow.
So yeah, this was a big accomplishment for me when it comes to this stuff, because me and Mike all went along, knew that we had to get in there with those beams and left to right and center, and we were both just like, oh. And now I'll show you, part of the basement is a crawl space. So over that crawl space, which I just showed you, I'm just going to do conventional lumber because you won't see it. The reason I'm doing the 6x8s underneath the basement is so when you look up, it looks kind of vintage, even though it doesn't matter. I just don't want conventional lumber in that house. It just doesn't seem like it would be, at least in the exposed area. So I'm going to just do conventional joist hangers and stuff on that side.
Cool.
But yeah. These big milestones, I got a lot done this week with the car, getting the car started and these floor joists. And once that floor is in place, things are going to kind of pep up a little bit.
Yep. That might be an interesting, I don't know if it'd be interesting for me. Like milestones are things that I don't feel like I hit very often.
Like I said to Mike, when we
through this thought, because I don't quite have it yet, but
Mike and I was so, Mike was like, I was dreading doing this because these things were heavy, they're cumbersome, it's just me and him. And I was like, instead of setting the goal of doing the whole floor, I'm like, today's goal is just to get the one joist up on the side. Took us about 3 hours. I'm like, that's it, we're done, let's go home. And then about 3 days later, I'm like, let's get the one in the middle. And I prepped the steel splice and everything. I was like, that's it, we're done. And so now mentally, it's much more easy to digest this overwhelming task by just breaking it into these things. And in the in-between time, I'm doing other stuff. So I'm not feeling like I'm wasting time on it.
Yeah.
And another thing that I got done this week, which I'll send you a picture of, is I hired guys to do it, but it's nice to know that it's getting done. I'm putting the bathroom in the horse barn. But the horse barn has a full set of plumbing and everything in it. My local guys got in there and they started putting that together. I'll send you guys a picture of that. So that's really nice knowing that that's getting done. Send you a picture of that. And so everything is inching along slowly, even though everything is incredibly overwhelmingly huge tasks, expensive and everything else, but a little bit at a time. And things start inching along.
Thanks.
David, what about you?
This week we were hoping to start making the case for the little kid's Casio keyboard that I talked about last week.
Yeah.
But I'm still working on the inside electronics, so we put it off and I needed something quick to do. And so we started making a drawer organizer for the kitchen where the forks, spoons, and knives go. And I'm making it out of this, mostly out of walnut. And it is a very specific, just for our silverware design. So like the forks fit into the shape of the fork. The spoon fits into the shape of the spoon. The whole thing is going to fill the entire drawer. So it's not sliding around. And Kelly doesn't even know this yet. So I'm just going to install it. And because right now there's going to be a before and after. And right now you open it up and the little bamboo dividers in there are all kind of broken and everything flies around and makes all kinds of noise every time you open the drawer. And it's just an ugly mess. And so now everything is going to have a proper home. And we've got like a decent silverware set. For some reason, I like really heavy forks and spoons. I don't know. I like a weighty utensil. It just makes me, I don't know, makes me feel better about myself. So I'm working on this and I'm just going to install it. And then I'm going to wait for Kelly to come home from work and start making her dinner and then hear the, but it's going to look really cool. It's all out of walnut. And of course, I don't have walnut that's 2.5 inches thick. So I had to glue up walnut. It's funny. We take boards that are, you take a big log and you cut it into thinner boards. And then now I need to glue those boards back together to get the thickness that I want.
Yeah.
So that is what I'm working on. Just a quick little thing. We were discussing earlier of like, digital tool. Like Jimmy was asking, like, did you guys always use digital tools or did you ease into it through YouTube? And we were both kind of eased into it. And this project would have been so much easier to just carve out on the CNC. I could have just drew it up and then just carved out the whole thing on the CNC, walked away, and it would be done by now. But I decided to cut a router template and then route each layer by hand. And it reinforced my hatred for the router, but it was still fun to do this by hand. I don't know when I draw the line of when to use the CNC and when to do something by hand, but this was one I just wanted to do by hand. And so,
something interesting. In my latest video where I do part two of the Cadillac rebuild, I cut all these roof ribs that become the roof line. And I didn't really say this in my voiceover when you guys get a chance to see it, but I hand drew the first pattern based on the cut roof line and I used it. And then in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I would really love to CNC this. But the struggle of translating that pattern into an Illustrator file at the moment in time is the same pain of bandsawing 10 of them out and trying to make them the same. So I weighed the pain against the pain and I was like, the visual pain of me using the bandsaw is more filmatic than me secretly alone at night trying to make the pattern and then run into the CNC machine and filming that. So the big hurdle to decide to use the bandsaw was sitting at Illustrator for 2 hours trying to get a perfect line drawing on top of the photograph of what I had. It was 60 inches wide and that's a really big picture to try and take. It's not going to be anything but cockeyed. I'm going to have to maybe take it in four sections and then splice it together. And all that went into me and just forget it. I'll just pass it.
I think what it was for me this time, and now that I'm thinking about it, is I didn't go out and buy walnut for this project. These were two boards that I already had in storage. And it was just enough to do this project. And if I would have glued everything up and got everything, you know, I had to spend time like planing and joining and gluing and all this. And I only had this one blank to work with. And my CNC success rate it's probably 90%, but there's always that 10% something goes wrong. The bit comes loose or you get the chatter.
And that's when you only have one piece of supply.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, if I do this by hand with the router, I have more control. I can tell if something is going to go wrong.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So on top go ahead.
I was just say, speaking of walnut, I'm trying to get walnut for an upcoming project. And like, you guys are lucky that you have places that you can go to get solid walnut. There are no places I can go to get it here. I have to go to Facebook Marketplace and track down some rando in their barn and like be trusting enough to go to their house out in the country and like, please don't kill me, you know. And yeah,
we used to go to Lebanon, Kentucky to buy wood, me and my my Bullet Bourbon guys. You know what Lebanon is?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And we go in and the we pay the guy and hang him behind the guy. There's like five AK-47s hanging on the wall. It's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
A couple other things. So the ground is thawing and there's something about my shop where my floor moves up and down. And I can tell it moves up and down. First of all, the floor is not flat. It's almost like a pitcher's mound in the middle of my garage. It was made, it doesn't make any sense why it was made that way, because if you drive a car in there and the rain or the snow melts, it doesn't grade to the outside. It would just all go to the edges. So something, and I don't think the foundation, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I don't think the foundation was made deep enough because it moves up and down. I made this sliding crosscut table for my table saw that's attached to the table. And then various times of the year, that table moves up or moves down because the floor moves so much and I have to recalibrate the whole thing. And it's a huge pain. And so that's always bugged me. And then just yesterday, I went to go use the big laser that I haven't used since the fall. I had to move it out into Kelly's garage and I went to use it because I wanted to cut something that was bigger than the smaller laser that I have in the shop. And I fired it all up. I put the piece of plywood in there that I was getting ready to cut. And then it did all the movements, but it did not fire a laser. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, everything is right. And then I open up the back and the glass tube, the laser tube was broke.
That's
because so I did not put antifreeze in the water cooler, but I did not put enough and it must have frozen, expanded and broke the tube. So between those two things, I think I've reached a tipping point. I think it is, I've looked into this before, but I think it is time for me to expand the garage. So I have somebody coming out to give me an estimate in a couple of weeks and probably should get a few more estimates, but I basically want to double the garage. The current shop, I want it to be turned back into a garage where I can park a car, have my metalworking tools, and then the new expansion would be basically the same size, but just.
Isn't that why you removed that tree back in the day?
Yeah, we had to remove three trees. Yeah.
For this project.
Yeah. So,
future planning.
Well, I wanted to do the expansion back then, right. But the estimates were way more than I expected.
They're always incredibly overpriced.
Plus, that was during COVID ish, and all lumber was just stupid expensive. So now we're going to try again and we'll see.
Let me understand correctly. So you're taking the shop, you would expand the garage, Kelly's garage, make that the shop, and then turn your current shop into a garage?
So, I sound so privileged. We have two garages, and one is attached, and that is Kelly's garage. And then we have a detached garage, which is my shop. Right. I have run out of room in my shop, so my metalworking tools and the big laser are in Kelly's attached garage. And so what I would do is expand the detached garage, doubling it in size. And then the front half where my wood shop is now would be where all my metal tools would go, get it out of Kelly's shop or Kelly's garage and put it in there. And then the back half would be the wood shop.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I see.
Back 4 years ago when I originally wanted to do it, is when I was all excited about working on the Impala, and that's why I wanted to do that, so I could have a place to put the Impala. But now I still want to sell it. And I think selling that would help me with like a down payment on the shop renovation. So that is where I'm at. I feel like now is the time to do it because things are okay. And I don't know that things will always be okay as far as like income. I don't know how long this is going to last. So I might as well do it now. Get it over with. Yeah.
Yep. Well, that's cool. So a couple of weeks you're getting a quote, you said?
Yeah. I contacted It was the company that did our big bathroom renovation. I contacted them yesterday or 2 days ago, and they said, we're not available until March 20-something, so they're going to come out then.
Well, that's cool. That's exciting. So we did have a little topic today, but also I was thinking about this while we were talking. I wanted to kind of formalize my thoughts before I interrupted again about it. Excuse me. I have been thinking for a while about like not having a lot of milestones. And this is not entirely true because I do have milestones and different things that I'm doing. Like I'm working on the course and we have set milestones for recording the new course and stuff like that. So, but in general, I feel like for the last several years, there have been several things that I'm just stuck waiting on. And this is kind of dumb, but I think the Land Cruiser was one of those things that made everything else feel kind of stuck. It's like this thing I wanted, this thing that was totally out of my control. And I just felt stuck and I don't know. And it had no bearing on anything else. I have another vehicle to get around. I work from home. I don't need that car to do my job or get kids places or anything else. So it is totally mental that I know
this feeling so well.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like because of that, I've maybe used it as an excuse to not set milestones for like the Karma Ghia to get it done. And so it has just slowed to a crawl. Now I do have next month, I am actively working on it and getting back to it. But I feel like there have been a lot of things. There's always a ton of stuff I want to do. There's a ton of stuff I want to learn. And I have been using that and probably a lot of other things as an excuse to just like, well, I just can't right now. I can't get to that thing. And I can't set up my first level of, yes, I can do this thing now, you know, and which your first milestone will set your second milestone and so on. And I think I've not been doing a lot of that. And instead, I've been just constantly looking for, well, here's another little thing that I can do. And I'll fill that in. And that becomes a project. That becomes a video. That becomes something that takes me a week or two when it shouldn't take me two. But it's the thing I'm working on right now. So I'm going to let it take as long as possible. And then I turn around and then there's this like literal and figurative pile of stuff that I want to do that I'm just kind of saying, well, I can't really do that yet. I can't get to that. I can't start those things. I can't make progress on that. And so I'm trying to figure out how to get around that. I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, like push away the small things for the sake of putting that small effort into small gains on the big things. It's easy to look at little projects and be like, yes, I can start to finish this in 2 weeks. And then I feel accomplished because this thing is done and I can set it aside. It's less interesting or less more difficult to look at something big and be like, I can chip away 1% of that thing and feel like I've done absolutely nothing in 2 weeks. But, you know, 100% is 101%. So if you chip away those little things, then eventually you're halfway done. And then eventually you're completely done. And so I'm just trying to figure
out. That's why, I describe what I'm up to. And I told you about all these different things. That was a little bit of therapy for me because I had this lingering sense of I don't feel like I'm getting enough done. But, you know, I did the bar carts, I did the house, I did the joists in the house, I did a lot on the car, I did a lot on the far, not to mention the first nice day we had, I took one of the pickup trucks and I loaded it with garbage I took to the dumpster, which is just stuff that's been trapped in ice and snow and lingering things that I basically put on the go in the garbage list that I haven't had a chance to move. Dude, that was a big accomplishment when I look around and I see that this winter garbage is gone. But the every once in a while, I have to stop and check myself. When you wake up, you know, you have this feeling sometimes if you have a disagreement with your spouse and you go to bed mad, you wake up and there's still that like haven't finished this yet. This disruption is not put to bed. And that could be either just conversation with your spouse, or it could be a lingering question from a sponsor, which I'll explain one in the after show, a lingering answer from a sponsor that kind of is holding you up. It could be, I'm working on these bar carts. The option was to make the top out of stainless or butcher block. And I finally got an answer yesterday. Butcher block is fine because we can get it done faster. And these lingering questions just kind of, I have to stop every once in a while and go, is there any unfinished business? Like when you go into a meeting with 10 people and you go, is there any unfinished business? I have to have that with myself. I have to stop. Is there any open issues? And I go, no, there's no open issues. And it's 65 degrees out. It's a beautiful day. And I go and like,
there's nothing in my way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I go and grab one of the cats and just sit on the back porch. It's like, it's such a nice feeling. But when you have these open issues, sometimes you have to stop and check and say, what are my open issues? Because you don't really always know, but you got to think to yourself, oh yeah, I'm waiting on the phone call from, you know, that for that money, or I'm waiting for that bill. And then like when the bill comes or when the check comes in from the client, you get the answer from your other client and this, and then, you know, you're cool with your spouse. You're like, ah, now the creativity really begins. All those little snags in the carpet, all those little snags in your sweater are kind of pulled in. So everyone's like, you got to do that check in.
Yeah.
When I have one of those things that blocks me from doing other things or feeling overwhelmed or worrying about milestones, the trick that works for me, is you have to get it down on a physical piece of paper that you can see. You need a list of things that you want to do, and your list of things that are bigger than a normal project or whatever. But just getting the stuff down on paper and just seeing it all there in front of you helps. I don't know why.
But that's so funny.
It just removes a mental block.
I don't know if we were on camera or not when I said, I have in front of me, like, let's go. I finally have a pad. And yeah. I got a bunch of like these line pads in front of me now. I got on Amazon, there was 6 for a pack of $5. So I bought like 10 or 12 of them. So now, like a psychopath, I have like hotel pads everywhere. And on them are random thoughts, like in the kitchen. I came in and I bought, and on a whim, I bought one pack that's 11 by 17. So it's like a dinner mat. And that's the one that's on the kitchen table. And it's got random notes drawn all over it and cat paws on it and stuff. And, but it is nice to be able to just have like a, oh, let's not forget about, like I edited the whole car video the other day. And you can't control this as an editor or somebody that creates content. In my head, I'm running through this various sequences. And then after that sequence is the one with the brakes. And then after that, and then I'm like running around doing stuff. And I'm like, I left out the whole alternator installation. Completely left it out. Why did I leave it out? I don't know why. So on the random pad, I write alternator installation. So that when I walk through the pad in the kitchen 16 times in a day, I have to stop and be like, all right, next time I go to my computer, I got to add the whole segment of the alternator installation, which I do that sometimes. You guys ever edit a video and then you're watching it 3 days later on YouTube and you're like, I left out that whole thing I shot on the other camera. I forgot all about it.
Yeah, it has happened.
Yeah.
I remember back in my 20s, maybe even 30s, I was in a lot of debt. I had a lot of collections. It was one of those like, don't answer the, I'm not here. I don't want to talk to debt collectors. And I just remember feeling, and it was all my fault. I just mismanaged money and didn't make enough money. And I just remember always feeling like, I will never get out of this. This sucks. And just feeling just, the dread all the time. And then I had a whiteboard up in my apartment and it was money I owe the world. And I just started listing all the things that I owed money to, and with a total on the bottom. And I was like, it's not as bad as what was in my head. As soon as I could see it, it's like, I can take care of this. I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I get the same feeling. And then I'm like, I got so much to do. And then I pull out a pad and I write down all the things. I'm like, that's what I'm worried about. I don't really have that much to do.
Yeah. I've talked about this before, but I think there's a mental weight to things that we don't appreciate how much it taxes your brain to keep things up here. And I think that's why writing stuff down can be really helpful.
Yeah, you're dumping it.
Imagine you're juggling, right? And you're juggling three things. When you juggle, somebody will disagree with me on this, but when you juggle, you're really focused on one thing. You're focused on the ball that is coming to your hand.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you grab that, then you're focused on the throwing the next ball. And there's always one floating, right? If you're throwing three, but you're only focused on one thing at a time. But it's hard because you have to be ready to switch focus to the next thing immediately. As soon as you toss one, you have to catch one or whatever the pattern is. And so if you have a bunch of things that you're trying to keep track of where they are or what left you have to do or what you're waiting on, then you are mentally juggling all these things and you can't switch between them, but you know they're up in the air and you know that you have to be able to switch to whatever's coming down next. And that's hard. But if you set the balls down, if you write them down on a piece of paper, you know where they are. You don't have to worry about, are they coming down next? Is that the next one I have to deal with? You just get to put it down and then focus on the one thing in front of you. So I think that's why writing something like that is why writing things down is really helpful. And that is something that I should be doing with these things. To be able to create a milestone, I need to have a cumulative list of all of the, this is a cool idea. How do I get this done? This is a cool idea. How do I get this done? Somebody's relying on me for this. So that probably would be a helpful state. I also was thinking about this in relation to feeling like I'm stuck or like I'm waiting on things. I have to recognize the fact, and this is intentional, I have, over the last couple of years, shifted how my time is spent a lot, intentionally, on purpose, towards my family more than ever before. And, you know, we all have the same 24 hours. We decide where we put that time, whether it's into ourselves, whether it's into our work, whether it's into other people. And I have actively decided to put a lot of that time towards the things that my kids are a part of, to be a part of that with them, to make sure that I am involved in the things that they're involved in. And you know, I'm choosing to put my focus, a lot of my time, at them. I think that's the right move. But it does make it so that when I look at the time that I'm putting on work, that has shrunk a lot. Like, I'm not doing heads down 8 hours of work every day. And if I were, I would probably feel like I was getting a lot more done. But I would also feel terrible, you know, because then I would not be as involved with my family. And so that is, and I think that you could apply that to anything, you know, whether it's family or whether it's, you know, hobbies and your own health or, you know, the community that you want to be involved in or whatever. You have a limited amount of resource as time, and so you're deciding where you want to put that. And if you give it to someone else, which is good, it means that you can't necessarily give all of it to yourself or to your work. And that is a choice that you have to make. I've made that choice, but I'm beginning to now, a couple of years in, feel the, whew, yeah, okay. So if I don't have 8 hours a day towards this, how do I make the whatever hours I do have towards work more effective? I don't want to say efficient because it's not all about efficiency, but I want it to be like impactful. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I want it to hit harder. I want the actions that I take to matter more. And the same goes with my family. I don't just want to show up to their stuff. Like, I want to be there. I want to be involved. I want to like talk to them about things and help them with things. And those are all just choices you have to make about how effective your time is once you've decided where to put all of your time. This went way off the rails. This is not what I was wanting to talk about.
No.
That's all stuff that's all wrapped up in my head.
I just realized with you saying that, I think sometimes making work stuff, for the most part, work is fun for all of us, I assume. But sometimes making something too efficient takes out the fun. And I like the efficiency versus impact, because impact over efficiency allows more time for play and allows more time to tinker, I think, and enjoy the moment.
And I think we get, especially as small business owners, we get conditioned, or I don't know, to think that we need to be more efficient. You make more money when you get more stuff done, when you sell more things. And so if you can be more efficient with your time and do things faster.
Insurance. Yeah. We know this isn't.
Sorry.
Okay. So speaking of
today's
efficiency.
Today's video is sponsored by.
Yeah. Jimmy can watch do a podcast and watch a video at the same time. That's efficiency.
I'm trying to read a comment. that somebody's asking me a question.
But I think, you know, like, that is kind of a trap that, like, not everything has to be efficient.
Yeah.
Like, if I look, I have four kids, right? So if I look at how do I make my kid time in the day more efficient, I need to evenly split it between the four kids and make sure that I get them from place to place and do all, you know what I mean? Like, that's not an investment in people. I'm not trying to be efficient and fair with my time with them. I'm trying to invest in what they're doing and who they're becoming. And that's where, like, impact matters way more. Like, 5 minutes of impactful time with any person is way more than 30 minutes of, like, we sat in the same place for 30 minutes and didn't interact or whatever. Like, it, so I'm trying to figure out how to apply that feeling of making a difference with my time to work as well as people in life, so that I feel like some of those milestones are a little bit more attainable, you know? So I feel like the car is actually moving ahead. The car stuff is weird too, because I got the Ghia as this, like, long-term project thing, and it's turning into way longer term than I wanted it to. But in the process of working on that thing, I started realizing what I liked about it. And then I started appreciating cars more. And then I started looking at more cars, like paying attention to them and appreciating more things about other cars. And so now I want other cars. And it's like this, like, slippery slope of, like, yeah, I want to work on that one. But I can't even finish one, or haven't even finished one car yet. So it's like this weird, you know, I keep wanting to, like, yeah, I want to learn more. I want to do more. I want to do that kind of car. I want to do that kind of car. But if I haven't finished one, then all I'm doing is adding more balls to the air.
It's because the problem solving part is more fun than the finishing part. I went through this recently with a project. Yeah.
Yeah. That is the truth.
One thing that could satisfy that need is to go find, like, a really beautiful, whether it's a Land Rover or a Corvette or something, just go find one that's like $20,000 and buy it. That's perfect. This way you have that need fulfilled. To me, it was kind of,
I don't
of
know that would work for me.
Yeah,
I don't
think for it me, works, it was kind of the Mercedes. Like, when I look online, like, I'm always looking for the, I have the R129 body Mercedes, and then the previous one, which I can't remember the model number, which is the one from, like, the mid 70s to the one I have now. I want one of those. So I'm constantly looking, but then I remember I have one sitting in the garage, and it's a good enough car. So having that sitting there, and now that the weather's nice, the need is satiated to go out there, pull it out, connect the battery, start it, take the cover off. Having that.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, that's a little anecdote.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't need to buy more things. There's also that. Well, we didn't get to the topic at all, but I guess we had a different kind of topic. Anything else y'all wanted to talk through around that stuff?
No, another good therapy session.
Yeah. I don't know that I actually made any progress, but it was good to talk about it.
I got to find a pick.
Shoot.
Yes, I do too.
We're already at 59 minutes.
Well, let me thank our Patreon supporters, because they're awesome. Big thanks to everybody on Patreon that supports the show, that gives us time to have our open therapy. We're very grateful for it. Everybody over there gets the after show, which is just more of this, but secret stuff or upcoming stuff that we talk about over there. It's usually another 15, 20 minutes. Separate podcast. The feed is on Patreon. You have to get it there. So you have to go to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up at any level. You get that feed. Put it in your podcast player, or you get the links to the YouTube videos, and you can check out the after show. And you also just get to support what we're doing, and that's really awesome. So big thanks to everybody over there, especially our top supporters who've been around for a long time. They're awesome. Those people are A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., OMG Made, Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods. Odin, I saw your comment about the Fusion course. Get it, man. Get it. Get it. It'll be good for you. Get it. Rich at Low End Design. Chad from Mancrafting. Works by Solo. Albers Woodworks. Corey Ward. And Nick Ryan. But also people like Chris McCormick, who I think is a new patron. So welcome, Chris. Yeah, we appreciate everybody over there very, very much. Y'all are awesome. I've given you more than enough time. Do you have anything to recommend?
I do.
Good, because I
Dave, don't. You go first.
Okay.
Dave.
So recent. First of all, I want to say happy birthday to Brian Prusa. I believe he turns 40 today. I'm not sure the exact, but yeah.
He's
happy
child.
Birthday, Brian.
He's just a child.
Just a child.
He's got a boy.
So my pick is Stumac. They make guitar. It's like a place where you can go buy guitar parts. But their YouTube channel, they just put out this. So far, there's 8 parts to the series on building a custom guitar. And these videos are, they're so good on building an electric guitar from scratch. And I think they're going to do a neck build next, which I'm really looking forward to. But they are just, it's, the pacing is perfect. Everything is explained so well. You're not, it doesn't feel rushed. You're not skipping over details. It's just, it's a fantastic series. And I'm like halfway through the series right now.
Cool.
Well, I was on an episode of Digi Fabricators last night. It's Jeff Stein and Al Schultz. I just found their podcast called Digi Fabricators. And it's new. They started it right at the end of the year, the beginning of this year. And they only have 10 episodes. I think I'm on episode 10 coming up at the end of this week. And, or maybe tomorrow. Yeah. So check out Digi Fabricators. And talking about CNC stuff, I'm looking at the previous few guests, and yeah, it looks like a good lineup. All good people we know, so check awesome. It out.
I gave you a hard time, but I really don't have anything except so who sent me this morning? Somebody sent me
your pic. Should be that the place that worked on your car.
No. A quick update. I mentioned last week the Carmine Street Guitars, and I said that I thought that it was a father-daughter duo. I was wrong. They are not related, no. And the young lady, who I can't remember, Carly, is that her name? Her name is the name of her guitar line. She just works there, and she builds her own guitars. So I was just wrong about that. I wanted to point that out.
All made from New York City recycled wood.
Yeah, super cool. So Mike this morning sent me this and mentioned it because of you, Jimmy. So there's this thing that anybody else, I don't know, if you're not a Lego person, you may not know this, but Lego has this website called Lego Ideas, and people who can build their own, they build their own sets and they make like a cool model. They submit it to this Lego Ideas site, and then the community will vote on it. And if it gets enough votes, then it gets pushed up in front of actual Lego designers at the company. And multiple times a year, they take the top models from this competition kind of thing, and then they end up turning them into actual Lego sets that you can like buy. And a lot of Lego sets are ones that started in this competition. So that's the Lego Ideas thing. Mike sent me, a Lego letterpress. And this is done by KRT Wood, which you guys may know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I had no idea, but it is very cool. I will send you a link to it. You have to sign up to the website to be able to vote for it. But it is a cool little mechanism, and I already voted for it because I'm already on the site, and anybody who's a Lego fan should get on there, and because there's just all sorts of amazing creations that people make. Like, some of them are cool looking models. Some of them are crazy contraptions that do really wild stuff. And even if they don't become sets, it's still just really cool to see what people can come up with in this medium. So go check out the letterpress by KRT Wood.
Hey, it does some creative stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. I think that's it. You guys got anything else for this week?
No, that's it. I'm good.
I'm good.
I'll give you a little update in the after show on my incoming new tool.
Man,
I got a new tool coming too.
What are we going to start talking about in the after show now? Now that your auto saga is over with.
Right. Yeah, we'll find something.
We'll replace it with something else.
Will break very soon. Yeah. I guarantee it. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
The pigeon. Love you. Bye.